I'm Franny Benali.
This is Klaus Lundekvam.
I'm Matt Letitia.
Dean Hammond here.
And you're listening to In That Number.
Here is Letitia, and he's done it! Lambert! There's the reply! Barry in for Haas! History made!
It's James Beattie! Oh, Belter!
Mané for the hat-trick! Pass lifts it and he's got it in as well! And Danny Ings has done it again!
Thanks for checking out In That Number with me, Kevin, the Moscow Mush Milverton, and Ray Hunt. Find me on Twitter at Moscow Mush and my co-host Ray Hunt at RayHunt84. Follow the show at Number Podcasts on Twitter, In That Number Podcast on Instagram and Facebook. If you've got any questions for the show, if you can be bothered, send us an email to inthatnumberpodcast@gmail.com. Leave us a 5-star review on iTunes or wherever it is you get your podcasts. Share, subscribe, and give us good vibes. Let's go.
Welcome to episode 118, A Fistful of Dollars, the first episode of a Soccer Tactics new look In That Number. Thanks to a successful U.S.-backed takeover bid with literally several dollars, we are now the official South Coast Crusaders franchise legacy fan podcast.
In a week that's seen the breakout of the awesome new European Super League, we also review the sorry-ass 1-0 L in the Soccer Knockout Cup at Wembley Bowl Arena against the Leicester Soccer Foxes, and throwing away that W thanks to a lame-ass second-quarter performance in the Premier League Legacy Conference road trip up at North London Soccer Roosters that had fans calling for Coach Hasenhüttl's head.
But before all that, let's say a howdy to our special guest this week, Legacy fan legend Ray the Freedom Hunter Hunt.
Howdy, partners.
Howdy.
Howdy, Ray.
And let's introduce Kevin, the goddamn commie out in Moscow, Russia.
I, for one, welcome our new American overlords.
We've got you by the soccer balls now, Britain.
Yeah, sorry, we've had some protests about overuse of the word soccer, so yeah, fuck it, I'm out of this, sorry.
Yeah, I'm gonna pull out too.
That's what she said.
Hey! Anyway, enough of this. Yeah, let's.
It didn't last long, did it?
No,
right?
It didn't. No, it didn't.
That's what she said.
let's get on with the real show, shall we?
We've got a big one ahead of us today, right?
Yeah, I think the only true thing in that intro was the title of the episode, which is A Fistful of Dollars. Anyway, we're here to discuss a very, very turbulent 7 days, not just for Saints, but for the whole of the footballing world, the rise and fall of the Doom Super League, the protests, the anger. And we've also had a terrible week results-wise, falling at the semi-final stage of the FA Cup without putting up much of a fight and spectacularly losing to Spurs from taking another first-half lead. Lots of anger and disappointment to get through today, so strap yourselves in. I'd like to officially announce our guest lineup today. We've got Tim Bazant and Alex Haas returns. Nice to have you guys back on. It's been a tough week for football off the field, and, you know, as a club, it's been dreadful on it. But how are we feeling?
Well, the real problem is that with my liver, this whole thing's drove me to drink, and I sound like I had a pack of too many cigarettes right now, and I haven't had any last night, so that's good.
I like it.
Yeah,
gives you a bit of an edge.
Yeah, I've been yelling and screaming so much last week that it just drove me to drink.
That's what she said. Oh boy.
And Alex, how are you getting on?
Only because I have to take care of my child. I didn't go that far, but I'm exhausted with football right now, to be honest. I think we've said in the Discord that both of us, myself and Ray, have never been closer to the Ralph out situation than we are right now. So, and that's a pretty shitty point to get to.
Yes, it certainly is, and we'll get to that in a bit. But first, Alex, how's the little nipper?
Oh my God, he is a full blown toddler now. He's walking.
Yay!
He's not really talking in complete words, but like he's understanding what things are. He can point at stuff and recognize them.
Is he pointing at the telly when Saints are playing and then screaming?
No. He usually screams. He usually screams, but he's not pointing and screaming at anything specific yet. Normally he shits his pants when Saints play too.
So. Oh, so do I.
That sounds pretty normal, actually.
Yeah, yeah.
Can you kick a ball yet?
No. We haven't tried, though, since he's been walking. We're still kind of just letting him get the hang of standing up and moving around.
I definitely want to see videos of him kicking his first football.
Yeah, I'll send one to the Telegram.
Yes, definitely do that. Right, should we kick off with ITN news?
Yeah, y'all. This is ITN In That Number News.
Okay, ITN News then. We will start with fixtures. Saints versus Leicester at St Mary's is now on a Friday night. That's Friday the 30th. That's next Friday. This is an 8 p.m. kickoff and it will be live on Sky. I don't know about you Americans. It's probably NBC, right?
Yep.
That's a good guess.
Favorite time slot.
Oh, yeah, of course, Kev, because you're 3 hours ahead, aren't you? So you've got a late night.
That, but, you know, Friday night football against Leicester's not normally a good thing, is it?
No, definitely not. We all remember what happened last time there. Following that, we travel to the champions, Liverpool, on Saturday, the 8th of May. That's an 8:15 kickoff, Kev. And that's also on Sky. And then we've got Fulham, Leeds, West Ham. And we're still awaiting that Crystal Palace game confirmation. But that's it, guys. Leicester, Liverpool, Fulham, Leeds, West Ham and Palace. Some really difficult games in there. And it's going to be difficult to pick up points against Leicester, Liverpool, West Ham. We need to take all 3 points against Fulham, you feel. But they're fighting for everything. And Leeds and Palace, too. You should probably expect 4 points out of that. Well, I will anyway. But how are you guys feeling about these?
I think minimum of 4 points and, you know, we'll be safe and not so sorry, I guess. For the end of the season. But yeah, I mean, judging on the most recent performance or, you know, most of the performances this year, I'm not expecting anything fantastic. So yeah, surprised me. I mean, it's a shame because I don't know about Ings, how long he's going to be out for. But I mean, Ralph, as you see in his interview recently, he said that we must be able to come over the line without Ings. It's an interesting turn of phrase, of course. Climbing over the line. But I mean, there's no surprise. We've been wank all year anyway.
Second half of the year we have anyway. Tim, what are you feeling about these remaining fixtures?
It's just like a gut punch left and right. Just watching this, it's more of a chore now than it is for pure enjoyment. Honestly, we just got to get some kind of points and hopefully somebody on the... I think they're going to... It's not us who's going to succeed. Somebody else on their team or whatever team we're playing against is going to just have to suck for that day or that game and give us a, you know, make some extra mistakes and give us the win. And honestly, just get the 40 and scrape together whatever we can because we can't do anything, honestly. It really sucks.
It's really bad that it's actually come to this. And who would have thought that in November being top of the league? But yeah, Alex, do you go along with that?
Yeah, I definitely. I'm nervous about these last few games. We got to get to 40, but I don't see it happening easily. And I bet that it's going to happen against teams. We we'll take 3 points against Liverpool, but we'll lose against Fulham. It's kind of how I see it going. Like it's just the same shit a different week, and it's going to be a tough watch over the next few weeks as we play.
Yeah, like Tim said, it's becoming a chore, and it's, you know, the enjoyment has been sucked out of it. Well, it has for me anyway, and especially this week, you know, it's just been, it's been difficult.
Well, I mean, seeing as the first team's been just disappointment after disappointment, and we had a lovely email from Scott out in New Jersey saying that he enjoyed hearing about the other teams, so a good time, I think, to talk about the other teams. Yeah, of course, the women's team and the B team, which I suppose in a less fastidiously woke podcast would be called, without irony, the birds and the bees. but we're not going to call it that. Well, maybe ironically. Yeah. All right, but yeah, start with the women's team, positive note. They've beaten Lewis. They've beaten 2-1 to get through to the next round of the FA Women's Cup. And yeah, it was quite a match. Rendell saving a penalty, and then Georgie Friedland and Rachel Panting with a couple of absolute screamers.
I sent Rachel Panting a message after that, and she responded to me and stuff. It was, it was a fantastic goal.
Like practically from the halfway line.
Oh, it was great. It was great. Brilliant.
But yeah, bringing it all down, of course, is the B-side. Getting absolutely dicked by Leicester 7-1 away.
I'm fucking sick and tired of Leicester. Who do we play next, by the way?
Fucking Leicester.
Yeah. Leicester.
Leicester.
That's rock bottom in the league now, Kev. That's 4 points behind West Ham and Leicester, who both have games in hand, and 2 games left to play, both against Everton. It's looking awful. That's 5 losses in a row, only 4 wins from 22, with a goal difference of minus 27. Ouch.
Going down like a sack of shit, man.
It's awful, isn't it? Really, really bad stuff. They need to sort something out there. It's it's pathetic. Any positive news, Kev?
Just any news, basically. I don't know if you heard, but the FA, the Premier League, the EFL, and a host of other organisations, they've all joined forces to start a social media boycott, which has been unironically called a blackout, and this is to show a stand against racism and racist bullying and harassment online. That's going to be from 3 p.m. on Friday the 30th of April to midnight on Monday the 3rd of May, so not going to be hearing anything from any clubs involved with those organisations.
Yep, fair play.
What do you think of it? Everyone understands that it's not going to eliminate racism, but if anything that can draw attention to what black and minority players have to deal with, I think fair enough.
I think so. I think it's good. They've got to do something. Something has to be done. Something more has to be done. But what can they do? Like you said, Kev, they can't eradicate it completely. It's always going to exist, isn't it?
Yeah. Just hopefully, minimise it so it's easy to deal with when it does crop up.
I didn't actually look into when the dates were when they were doing the blackout, so I was a little surprised to see Southampton having an Instagram post this morning, because I was like, I thought they were in a blackout. Like, what is this? But I definitely agree that I'm in support of it, and something more needs to be done on social media platforms about the abuse that a lot of players and other people, everyday people that aren't playing football, get, and that the platforms have a responsibility to make their social media platforms a place where everybody is welcome and not tolerate the abuse that people get. Especially high profile people like football players.
Absolutely. Yeah, well said.
I get it. I would actually have liked them to do a little bit more, and just how about a little bit more is I didn't want them to announce it. I just want them to shut everything down, and with a nice worded statement that they can put out and give to somebody and say, fuck you guys, you're causing some problems. We're shutting this down for a week and we're going to make a difference, because making the announcement ahead of time leading in for a 4-day blackout, it's more PR related than true action based. Yeah. Where if they just said, nope, we're shutting it down. Instagram, Facebook, all of these, it's the people behind it. Obviously, people who run Facebook or Instagram can't control the people who are with what they say, but there are various steps they can take. And I want them to take bigger action against it than just announcing a week ahead of time that they're going to shut down for 4 days. And they could do more. It's a good start.
Yeah, it's a very good start.
I mean, the Swansea and Birmingham, pretty much when their players were getting abused, they just shut up shop completely.
Unacceptable,
I mean, Facebook and Twitter and all these other companies need to be doing a lot more to try and root it out.
I mean, it's all about education, too. Everybody here when it comes to being able to provide that, people are ignorant. And it only, the platforms will only allow for the ability to showcase that hate that is currently and still out there today. And it shouldn't be, because people use that as a mechanism for their own, I'm better than you, and by whatever it might be to get their point across, it's not healthy. And, you know, whether it's an education problem, which it primarily is, or just an entire thought process issue that they grew up in a location that didn't have that ability to critically think and know that people should be loved and cared for and respected no matter what, who you are, what you look like, how you act. As long as you love everybody, you know, you can treat everybody well. You don't have to, if you don't really want to like them, don't say anything. Okay. That's the biggest thing. But the platform itself does allow for a funnel to get to and attack individual players or whatnot. And, you know, go find them and say, here's what you're doing. And this is a problem. And you need to be taken care of.
Yeah, it's like my mum used to say, if you've got nothing nice to say, don't say anything at all.
Yeah.
That's why me and Kev just spent our childhood being silent.
Yeah.
That's why there's so much dead air sometimes.
Yeah.
We should just put out a Saints podcast of silence in the future then.
Yeah. I think some people might prefer that.
Yeah, it's your choice to listen, mate. one quick item of news before we get into the main one. Shane Long, with that groin injury, he's back at Staplewood for treatment for the near future, for hoping to get him back into shape. So,
yeah.
Well, soon, Shane Long.
Right. Now, the real reason we have a strong panel today is to discuss this Super League. When we were preparing for this episode, we were in the midst of all the chaos, and obviously it's been resolved somewhat. But I still would like to discuss everything with you chaps. I'll start with you, Kevin. I guess where do we start? In your own words, Kev, how did you take to the news of this Super League?
Yeah, I think it took everyone by surprise, to be honest. It came completely out of nowhere. But, I mean, as different individuals and organisations started to respond to it, I really didn't think it's going to happen. I still don't think it's going to happen. But, yeah, I didn't really treat it with any kind of credibility whatsoever. But I think, is it just posturing on the part of these big six clubs in England and the other European clubs that they want more power and more money?
Possibly.
They're just flexing their muscles, or was it a genuine attempt to build a breakaway league? I guess we're not going to find out anytime soon.
I don't know.
Well, I mean, yeah, Florentino Perez seems still to be under the impression that it's going to happen. But, I mean, he's just fucking deluded, isn't he?
The guy is, yeah.
There's a reason that I watch soccer in its own current state right now, because it's not the American system. I want something that's different, and I enjoy the aspect of everything that it provides over there in the UK and in European leagues. It truly does. You can build a team from the ground up, whereas the closed model system here that we're used to for the NFL, NHL, MLS as well, because it's often joked about that the MLS is a pure Ponzi scheme. But beyond that, they are American owners taking an American idea of a closed model system and trying to escape away and get money out of it. So I was enthralled by to see what was happening, because just as you initially heard it, I'm like, oh, is this actually going to work? And then quickly, you know, I've never seen so many people come together and actively hate something like that.
I don't know. Star Wars, The Last Jedi. That was pretty close.
This is different. This is like, these owners now cannot step foot anywhere near that area without full on security detail. And even then, I'd still be a little worried if you're Stan Kroenke or John Henry, or, well, especially Glazers, man, they've been hating for a long time. This is even way worse. So seeing all that, it's like a car crash, and then eventually turned into a train crash right before my eyes as I'm watching it. So on Monday, my productivity was super low because I'm streaming Sky Sports News from across the pond and just trying to check it out. And is it going to happen? No, but it's been a great cover up from the recent Champions League changes, which are absolute shit too.
Maybe that was it. It was kind of like, let's just put the Super League out, and then when it falls flat on its face, we'll discuss the change of the Champions League, and it won't seem so bad. So they have to take it on, you know, if you know what I mean. But Alex, how did you take to the news?
It was shocking, and it was something like out of a Bond movie. or in my fantasy nerd brain, it was a very good Dungeons and Dragons plot where you have this group of superpowers scheming behind everybody's back and forming this breakaway league. And it was very enrapturing. I mean, like Tim, I spent a lot of my time on Monday and Tuesday and through the rest of the week just streaming Sky Sports and watching all the news about it and hearing different players' reactions and different pundits' reactions. And I think also like Tim, I fell in love with the European model of football because, and I'm saying football because I don't want to do pushups. because of the promotion and relegation, like every team has skin in the game, and there's a magic about being able to work your way up from the bottom and get into the Champions League. That is true magic in this world where your hard work has merit. And that's why I don't watch American sports anymore, because it's a closed system. It's just franchise based, and it's not interesting. Those teams play week in and week out, and there's no skin in the game. In the NFL, you can go on and play the Super Bowl, which is entertaining, but those teams label themselves world champions, but you're not a world champion because you're hardly even international. Like you're playing in one country and you're playing with teams that, regardless of how bad the Buffalo Bills do, they are always going to be in that league.
They did well this year.
But in past seasons, they've been pretty shit. I mean, the Lions are another club that, or team that people have said in the pro rel discussion would be relegated if there was such a thing in American football. And it was, I don't know, it was heartbreaking because the owners of these clubs have now besmirched the club identity, I think permanently. And it's hard to think of a scenario where you can actually take some sort of action against what they did to make sure it doesn't happen again.
Well, I mean, yeah, we're going to have to discuss punishment Alex, Real Madrid president Florentino Perez said on Wednesday that the project is on standby, as Kev alluded to earlier, says we're still not done, despite all six English clubs putting out, you know. How long is it going to take for it to rear its ugly head again? Because he's also said that I don't need to explain what a binding contract is, but effectively the clubs cannot leave.
It seems like the clubs are trying to do everything they can to save face right now in the wake of all the protests and the backlash that they've had. But yeah, that's a really good point. Who knows what these contracts say, because they were done behind they were done in the dark behind everybody's back secretly. And I personally think that it won't be long until something like this happens again, which is why there needs to be some action against it to somehow hurt these owners' pocketbooks.
51% fan owned. That's what is on the cards.
100%.
Like the Bundesliga. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. You know. But Perez has also said, Kev, that, you know, this is the only solution for football. I'm sure it is. Kev, with these points, I mean, some of the points now aren't valid, are they? Because, you know, we've come to our senses over this. But I do want to bring this up, right? Active players have openly stated that they didn't want it to go through. You've heard from Patrick Bamford, you heard Bruno Fernandes, James Milner. But when the fans are allowed to return back to the stadiums, they're in the firing line, not the owners. They're going to be out of sight, counting their millions, whatever, whilst the players are going to be taking all the flak. This isn't fair. Everybody wants these six clubs in England to be punished on the field now. But it's not fair on those players that didn't want this to go through anyway. They're just pawns being manipulated, right?
Yeah. I mean, they don't really have a say. I think banning them from international competitions, the players, I think that's unfair. It's a bit tangential. But I mean, anything from banning them from European competition for a season or more, or a points deduction in the league, probably more feasible. Say, all right, show how much better you are than the rest. Start on minus 10 points. Good luck. Unfortunately, I don't think either of those things is going to happen. But, I mean, the minimum I'd expect is a transfer ban like Chelsea had the other season for whatever financial misdemeanors they had. something's got to happen. I mean, the Premier League saying that they're going to get them all to sign a decree that says that they won't break away again. Oh, yes, we promise. But that's, you know, shutting the gate after the horse is bolted.
Yeah, that's true.
And if they have a binding contract with the Super League, then how can, like
exactly, they break away from that.
Play out. Right, yeah.
Tim, like Kev has just said about the players being banned from representing their countries in the Euros or the World Cup or whatever, I'm pretty sure the Glazers don't care if Bruno Fernandes doesn't make the Portuguese squad for the Euros. And once again, this is punishing the players who were against the idea and not the owners.
100%. And UEFA's swinging their big dick around too and causing problems. So they're the lesser of two evils, while still, albeit very evil in this case. So I see, you know, the idea of deducting points and the transfer ban. Honestly, I don't know if that's the correct punishment to fit the crime. Number one is you're going to see a governmental change and push for either ownership structure issue, you know, ownership structure, where that fan implementation is going to come into play, where governments are going to effectively get on the side of fans and allow them to get an easy win in the political sphere for that. But seeing all of that, I don't necessarily feel like, yeah, you should be punishing the players, because it's not an object of what the, you know, the mechanism of what they're completing. So to me, I'm talking money, and what I mean by money, I mean lots of money. So say they're going to make £40 million or something,
yeah,
like that per?
It's around that, yeah.
Okay, well, they should be, each one of those teams needs to be fined £40 million. For one year. And what they need to do then is that money is then going to go support grassroots movements in football all throughout England. That's what should be their fine.
That's not a bad idea, Tim, because it's, yeah, they've pissed off a lot of the grassroots of the, so to give, mm-hmm, to give back.
We're talking the entire community, you know, community structures, you know, anti-discrimination based groups, all of that. If you're saying that's £240 million, that can be then donated and put back into the community. I'll tell you what, if they went through all of this and then they ended up, you know, different nonprofits acquired £240 million because of these from these six clubs, I would hope it's actually going to turn out for the better, because they're not going to be hurt by their players not being there. The transfer activity, removing the ability for them to transfer in and out players, doesn't necessarily fit to me. This is about money, so they need to be punished through money. And taking whatever revenue that they would have made from that first year of being in the Super League is the amount of money that they should be paying back into the community, directly into the community. And then government will eventually then change and figure out what's the best for the structure. Like you said, 50+1. Well, that's not a perfect solution. It's a much better than what they currently have. But they need to be fined big time. And
yeah,
that's what I feel is the correct punishment for the crime. Albeit it's not really a crime with what they did. I think they just need to, if you want to support and make amends for it, $40 million. £40 million, that is, you know, between all the six teams, put it back in a grassroots movement all throughout England, then you're good.
Hit them where it hurts their wallets. Yeah, just give it to Bury. Let Bury get back on their feet again. Let them start up a football club. Let them buy Harry Kane from Tottenham, and then of course, Daniel Levy gets the money back, and then we start all over again. Alex, how much respect do you have to give Bayern Munich and PSG for this? Because, you know, apparently Bayern Munich were the first ones to be approached, and they turned it down straight away, and they said they didn't want any part of it. Paris Saint-Germain has said afterwards, after Bayern Munich, that they didn't want a part of it either. But then, of course, the German football, we went all out and said no German clubs are going to be, you know, supporting this. But that, you have to give them so much respect for that.
Oh yeah.
Massive balls.
Why didn't they leak it? If this was going on and they told them to fuck off, why didn't they leak it?
That's a good question. That's a good point, yeah.
Well, so now my respect was just lowered a little bit, because that's an interesting observation. But to say no to something that seemed like a big money-making scheme, as Tim just pointed out, I mean, that takes some balls to do that, especially when you consider like PSG and Bayern being those top teams in France and Germany, respectively. You'd think that they would want to promote themselves more and make more money for themselves, but they turned it down. So slow clap for them.
Having the foresight to realize that it was going to be an absolute shit show.
Yeah, absolutely. Good.
Kev and Tim, we talked about a little bit of punishment, what you would do. But there's also talk about them being kicked out of the Champions League, Europa, FA Cup and Premier League, whatever, this season. I don't want that at all, because I'm all for letting them continue this season with their achievements and then punish them next year. Because, and if you say Chelsea are out of the FA Cup, Leicester won't want to win it like that, surely, will they? Leicester won't want to win the league like that either. I mean, I know I wouldn't want that for Saints, because if you banish Chelsea, Man City, then of course you get a final again of Saints and Leicester. But I don't want that. And then, so I'm talking about punishment for next season. Tim's brought up a good point. I reckon you should relegate them. This will be fun. Relegate them all, right? Relegate all six of them. Start, you know, next season, the big six compete in the Championship. You'd only be able to promote three, wouldn't you? So there's a strong chance that Arsenal, Spurs and United would have to stay down there for 2 years. The players would want out because there's no guarantee of European in that stretch. And they also need to know that nothing like this can happen again. So, yeah, heavy fines, banned from cup competitions or something like that. That would be great for football. And obviously Saints would probably still miss out on Europe.
Yeah, I'd love that. But yeah, that's just fantasy really, isn't it?
Yeah. Oh, it is. But Alex, what would you do punishment-wise? How would you do?
I've thought about a number of things. I mean, a point deduction sounded the most feasible, I think. I kind of agree with what Tim's saying. The fines, fine them what they would stand to make in the Super League deal, give that money back to the grassroots soccer community. Oh, shit, there's push-ups. it's really hard, though, isn't it? Because you can't – it's hard to find a balance between punishing the club so that the owners' pocketbooks get hurt while also not completely devastating the achievements that the players have gotten.
Well, that's what Kev was bringing up, like a transfer embargo. That would affect the clubs, surely, wouldn't it? Not the players, because they're still – they're still there at that time, but they can't bring any new ones in.
The agents' fees would probably get hurt too, and then maybe clubs would reconsider how much they're actually playing. They're paying for their players. I think there are a number of options that can be considered, and there's a sad part of me that thinks that it's not going to happen, because now that the owners have come out and apologized with their half-hearted bullshit comments, I still think that nothing is going to happen.
I do too. I do. I know it's fun to play and think like this. It would be good. But Tim, any final thoughts on the Super League from you?
It's all about the haves and have nots. The structure of capitalism is a very, 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 very long conversation, even beyond what we can talk about here. But the only way that capitalists know how to be affected is by messing with their money. And when you're messing with their money, then they perk up and say, what's going on? And we're not talking like, oh, here's a couple million pounds, which they'll, you know, write one from their own checkbook and say, here you go, not a big deal. We're talking significant, massive amount of fines. Everything else in terms of what I feel is appropriate, you know, like, fuck it. Yeah, relegate them. Screw them all. Like, you know, I can think of a lot crazier things of what I personally want to do. But the punishment to fit the crime here, it's all about money. Make them start. I mean, make them pay. Make them pay big time for it, and for doing things that are against the national interest at hand and in the interest of the Premier League. So you could start by supporting and funding grassroots movements, and they can at least then put a Band-Aid over the problem.
Yeah. Kevin?
Yeah, I'd have to agree with Tim. Hurting the fans or the players is not necessarily fair, but I mean, that's what usually happens when with financial mismanagement or, you know, general administrative fuck-ups. I mean, we've seen it with our own club. We've been docked 10 points and rooted to the bottom of League One. Fans didn't have anything to do with that, but they had to deal with it. But yeah, I mean, big fines, and I think taking away control from these, you know, monolithic sports corporations or rich individuals and putting it back into the hands of fans. If that's the thing that comes out of this, then I think maybe we could say that there's some restitution.
We're talking socialism now, Kevin.
Yes, for the masses. A dictatorship of the proletariat. That's what we're looking for.
Alex, any final thoughts?
I got to give a slow clap to Patrick Bamford for saying something that I think should have been said. It's been awesome to see the backlash from the fans, but it is a shame to see that it's only happened when people's pocketbooks are threatened. Not necessarily from the fans, but from UEFA and FIFA and all the other organizational bodies that essentially have been calling the kettle black as the pots. But it's a shame that they've organized such strong backlashes against this when they could do so much more to combat racism in the game itself. When you have players throwing racist remarks at other players and handing bans out that are just comical in terms of their actual punishments.
Agreed. Yeah, that was good from Bamford. It was nice to see.
I like the shit housing of Liverpool on Monday with all those t-shirts and everything.
Yeah. Klopp didn't like it much, but yeah.
No, but fucking.
Right, okay, so we're going to talk about the games now then, guys.
Do we have to?
This is Klaus Lundekvam, and you are listening to In That Number.
Okay, then. Right. Leicester City, FA Cup semi-final. Well, I mean, where do we start here? We just didn't find anything at all, did we? We didn't even have a shot on target. Just disappointing showing. One of those games I guess you wish we could just do again. Although, having said that, we'd probably do the same. There were reports before the game that Ralph was showing them a motivational movie. What the fuck did he show them? Titanic? I just don't know. Kev, what the hell happened?
Well, nothing, really.
No, that's it. Well, we went out. That's what happened. A ship that was sinking, yeah.
Yes, just lackluster from both sides, really. Semi-finals and finals are normally quite cagey affairs anyway. Not entirely goal fests, but... neither side really seemed up for it, I think. Both sides surely must have been going into this thinking, right, you know, Saints there for the taking, shit from, can't even beat West Brom. Leicester also, you know, had their own troubles, players cocking about with parties and orgies or whatever it is they're up to. not on the best of form. So going into it, you think, right, we can really grab this by the jugular. But that was just like a both teams decided to throw it at the same time. Leicester were the first ones to crack us with a shot on goal, which I believe is the only shot on goal in the whole match.
Yeah. Yeah, it was abysmal, wasn't it? And
honestly, it was just a blackout game because it was just there was nothing memorable about it whatsoever. There was little teeth in attack. There was nothing outside. Like, we didn't have one shot on goal, practically, or at least it didn't seem like it.
No, we didn't.
And yeah, and it was dull. There's not much more to say to it besides we play a crap game and any motivation is not there. And I don't know what movie, probably the movie Glory, because in the end, ultimately, they do crash and burn and die. And that's probably the best way I can describe it, because that's probably the best motivational movie that I can think of that would end up like that.
Yeah, I think the most memorable part of the game was how nervous I was beforehand. I'm trying to recall what actually happened in the game outside of Diallo getting a silly yellow card and blasting that shot over the bar and Iheanacho just cutting us open. I berated the Chelsea-Man City leg of that FA Cup round because that looked really boring and dull, like neither team were going for it. And then lo and behold, Saints, Leicester, same thing.
Yeah, I remember. It's funny you say that, Alex. I remember being so nervous at the start of this game. I can't remember the last time I was this. I was pumped up so much for this game. I was like preparing for it and I was pacing up and down. I was literally pacing up and down just to stay active because I was so just antsy to get going, and it just, yeah, it's so disappointing. This is going to be a really, really difficult question for all three of you, but who would you give man of the match to? Who wants to go first?
I'll go first, because I think at one point I was chatting with you, Ray, and I said that Ward-Prowse looked good in terms of his defense. Like, he was covering everything. I would give him man of the match with, you know, low standards, because while he did put in the work rate that doesn't count for everything if you can't get a result out of it. And that's something I'm guilty of with a lot of these players. Like, oh, you work really hard, but sometimes that's just not enough. And you got to do better. But Prowsey was one of the few guys up for it. And it sucks that not everybody else could try to be brave enough to, you know, move on to the next round.
You know, yeah, I'm going to have to agree with Alex. I think there's man of the match isn't really much of a plaudit after that kind of match. It's difficult. I mean, if in doubt, give it to Danny Ings. But I mean, I just don't want to this time. I'm going to give it to Prowsey as well. I don't think he had a particularly bad game. Didn't have a particularly good game either. I've seen slightly more favourable ratings for Bednarek and Vestergaard, but I wasn't really impressed, to be honest.
No. Tim?
Usually it's a safe bet to go with Ward-Prowse. Yeah, the safe bet is go with Armstrong. He made enough progressive movement runs, though, that made somewhat of a difference. Obviously, you know, there was nothing, there was no closed in, there was no heavy attack that we saw, but seeing how he plays out and been basically pretty much been on top of it just about every game that we can imagine, I'm going to go with Stewie.
Yeah, I think Stuart Armstrong was actually one of mine, but I'm going to go completely different. I'm going to give it to Diallo just because he had a shot. He had a shot. That was it.
He had a couple of cracks, didn't he?
Yeah, that's the only thing I can remember. So, yeah, both of those, it could have been Armstrong, Ward-Prowse, or Diallo for me, but I would say a 5 out of 10 for all of them. And yeah, man of the match for Diallo just because he came closest. That's my that's why I've given it to Diallo.
The number of mistakes he made. I mean, he practically gives the ball to Vardy for that first chance that Perez skies, and then does exactly the same a few minutes later. And Vardy puts it over to he didn't really have a strong performance, in my opinion.
Anyway, enough of that. Right, let's go and talk about more bollocks. Spurs.
Lovely thing.
Yeah, thank you. This one really, really hurt. You know, it was really difficult to get ready for this game as well because of all the shit that was going on beforehand. Yes, it was settled before kickoff, but then, you know, Mourinho was out. Ryan Mason come in. I felt the pressure on. For the Leicester game, obviously, because it was a semi-final and all that. And then there was the Super League chat. And I felt relieved because I thought, yes, we can get back into football, get back to playing. And my spirits were quite high, you know, just before kickoff. The opening 45 minutes was pretty promising, I have to say. It was so much better than the Leicester one. I mean, it created more chances in the opening 5 minutes than we did against Leicester. It was scored with a brilliant header as well from Danny. And then, you know, same shit again. It was just second half, looked lost, tired. Shea had run himself into the ground. He just looked done and collapsed. Collapsed again. Kevin, did you see the same?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, disappointed that Shea didn't get his chance in the semi-final. Really mattered. But good to see him and Ings up top again. And, Teller back in the team too.
Yeah.
Weird with Bertrand being left out. That was definitely a surprise for us coming into this. I mean, was there an injury or was he just completely out of favour?
I still don't know, to be honest. I have no idea. It did seem weird, and Salisi come in, and he's not a left back, is he? He's definitely not a left back.
He was good in spells in that position.
I think that game kind of summed up his whole Saints career because sometimes he looks really comfortable, and you think, yeah, we've got ourselves a player here. And then sometimes he does these stupid things that you think, what is he doing? And I just don't know what we've got with him just quite yet. But I know that we shouldn't be putting him left back, that's for sure. Tim, how did you feel about this game?
Once again, it's just troublesome, and it's a chore to have to be able to watch it. Although, at least for the first half, we looked pretty good. I was in the middle of work, so I didn't get to catch every single second of it. But at least from the first half that I saw, there were some decent chances there. Going up 1-0 against them and taking the initial goal, always a good thing. Ward-Prowse with his amazing set deliveries. They obviously worked on a few things in practice for those set pieces. And then from there, we just collapsed like we normally do. So it's just expected at this point. And Ryan Mason, you know, whether it be the new manager bounce or not, I don't think he did anything spectacular there. We couldn't do it. We just couldn't. No Harry Kane. Like, that's our chance to at least take a point. You know, if we walk out of there and we tied and said, okay, like, that's it. Like, we went to Tottenham and we tied. All right. But no, it's just been absolute shit and it sucks. And I'm a little burnt out, honestly.
Yeah.
Because it's just tiring.
I'm right with you there, Tim. I really am. And Alex, I mean, 1-0 up, playing okay, or playing good, I would say. Second half, you know, you let the equaliser into a Gareth Bale shot, fine. But the way that the lack of effort there, that everybody run themselves into the ground, and to lose like we did, you know, free kick originally, and then they obviously changed that decision and given a penalty. It was difficult. A draw would have been a fantastic result there, considering how well we played in the second half. But to lose like that, it was just really unfair. And to let that, he's one of my most hated players right now, because he always seems to score against us.
Yeah. Especially after being let off from a offside call, which I think VAR did a good job there and trying to be as unbiased as possible. But I definitely, I agree. Sorry, Teddy's crying in the stairwell.
Oh, no, Teddy agrees with you.
Yeah, he does. It seemed like going into that game, we had karma on our side. Jose Mourinho got fired. No Harry Kane. You want to stick it? Like, fuck this team. They're one of the big six that just tried to break away. Like, go stick it to them. And this is why I am now at a point where I want to almost say Hasenhüttl out. Because we had the formation didn't change, but we had players in positions where they were doing well. We had Armstrong holding with Ward-Prowse in the middle. And when Ings got hurt, you replaced him with Diallo and moved Armstrong up. And Diallo just slowed everything down. It's like all of a sudden the urgency went out of the game and we let them come onto us rather than, you know, going after them. Why didn't you immediately just put Redmond on and have him run down everything in his path? It's so frustrating to see these kind of substitutions that are just like, what the fuck are you doing every week?
I think the thing that I'm running out of patience with Ralph is that we've said it many, many times on this show that there's no plan B. I mean, it's like the pre-match, Ralph's fantastic. He seems to pick the right players, the right positions. He knows what he's doing. Everything's all sorted. And then as soon as we get exposed, there is nothing. There's no plan B. Now, I don't know whether that's just because he just doesn't have the players that he wants in. But like you said, Alex, he's not making the right decisions in game. He doesn't know what to do on the fly. Whereas everybody else can go in at half time and say, right, Saints are exposed here. Kyle Walker-Peters is going forward too much. Let's get Son in behind him.
Right.
Boom. Everybody seems to know how to play Saints in the second half, and that's not a coincidence. It's just we cannot – I don't know if we can change on the fly. Like Brighton did it, didn't they, against us? Mm-hmm. Everybody seems to be able to change their tactics against us, but Ralph doesn't seem to do it. He just doesn't know what to do when we go a goal down. And for God's sake, I mean, if we have to close a game out from being in a lead with 10 minutes to go, I don't like it at all. I do not like it.
I miss Shane Long.
Yeah. Guys, man of the match? I'll go first then. I'm going to give it to Nathan Teller for that first half display. I thought he looked like something that we haven't got. He looks like Gineppo does on the games that he's playing really well. He was causing problems. I think Ralph had said after the game that he liked his performance. And I think he's here to stay now, you know. I think he's going to be in that starting 11 against Leicester just because of those comments. So I'm going to give it to Nathan Teller.
I'm going to say exactly the same thing.
Well done, Kev.
He was really impressive in that first half. A great ball in for that. I mean, Lloris pulled off a double save, but Salisu's header there and Che with the rebound both saved. We were really unfortunate to not score at that point and on a number of occasions. And he's looking fast and up to his best. I mean, in Lindelöf, he'd been sort of given so many chances. He's fallen out of favour really now, hasn't he? And Teller looks like the one breakthrough player. I say that, I'd probably get sent off in the next match. but yeah, I thought he had a great match. And yeah, he's inspired by the match.
Ings was it up until he got injured. So I'll go with Ings.
Okay. Alex?
Yeah, I'm torn between Tella and Ings. Ings scored a great header, and it's, again, we see how crucial he is to our press and leading that press from the front, because once he went off, everything changed. And I'm gonna go with Ings. I think we'll just have a 50-50 split here.
One player we haven't talked about is Alex McCarthy, who started over Fraser Forster, who hadn't really had that bad a performance coming into this match. I mean, what do you think the reasoning is behind that?
I honestly just think that he's just showing both his goalkeepers some love, that he has got, maybe it's just because that both of them are, none of them have done anything wrong. I've got two good goalkeepers here. I'm just going to rotate them. I don't think we need to read anything into that. I would not be surprised if Forster started on Friday night.
Yeah, I'd be surprised if McCarthy started. How do you rate his performance? Because I'm lucky, I suppose.
Yeah, fine. Nothing out of the ordinary.
Yeah, that Gareth Bale shot was quality. I mean, yeah. You couldn't ask for much more from any goalkeeper in that situation, I think.
After the game, guys, there's some serious questions circling over social media about Ralph's exit. A lot of polls going up. Alex said at the top of the show that he's still Ralph in. I'm still Ralph in. But like Alex said, it's the closest I've ever been to him being out. But I don't know whether that was just a knee-jerk reaction to the results now. I know the guy needs some investment, but it's his lack of changes and his stubbornness with the current system and the fact that we're so predictable to play against. Like I said as well, opposing managers find it easy with their halftime team talks. I mean, Ralph is a good manager, but it's just not working at the moment. And we will a fresh face make a difference? I'm not so sure it will. But do we need to get a change in the summer and get a new message across? Or do we stand by him and give him the funds and the chance to finish what he started, Kev?
Well, let's hope that the funds are there. I mean, I'm about 60-40 Ralph in at the moment.
I'm about there.
Yeah, and, you know, with every loss, you know, you lose another percent or two.
It's not just a loss. It's the way that we're losing. The fact that he's not doing anything about it, or he doesn't seem that he knows what he's doing about it.
Yeah, I mean, the frustration of having a good first 45 minutes and then throwing it all away. You can kind of take that because it's just a classic Saints tragedy. But when they don't even try for the whole 90 minutes, that's when you start thinking, oh, are the wheels coming off the Ralph Express here? But at least that last match against Tottenham, you know, had that spark. We were definitely the better team in the first half. We just couldn't grind it out.
And that goes down to the way that we play, doesn't it?
It does, yeah. I mean, but is that a matter of squad depth? The players he brought on, they should have been making a difference, really. Gineppo, Redmond, Diallo, maybe not so much. He was kind of brought in as an understudy, wasn't he?
But, sure, yeah.
Is the whole squad knackered? I don't know. If we need a bigger squad, we're going to need more money and more investment in the summer. I think this transfer window is going to be crucial to whether we stay up next season.
Absolutely. Tim, I'm interested to hear your thoughts on Ralph at the moment.
I guess the assumption is, can you do better without him?
Yeah, no, I don't think we can.
No, and that's my answer, is I don't think we can do better without him. I think the expectation that we're all living up to and want to push for is that, you know, the Pochettino, the Ronald Koeman, the finishing and pushing for Europa places consistently. But in reality, we're a mid-table squad that has had some shit luck, some bad injuries, and then some poor overall just actions in 2021. So, I don't know. Have we peaked? Potentially. But can we do better? Probably not. Maybe a few points here and there. But...
Well,
I'm not at the point where I'm Ralph out, but I'm not at the point where I feel like, you know, with the exact same situation and just with a managerial change, something will effectively flip a switch and now we're 10 points better than we should have, in retrospect, better than where we were at.
It's a hard sell. I mean, what manager are you going to attract with the proposition of, oh, yeah, you're going to have exactly the same players, no investment, and I don't think even Adkins would touch it, to be honest.
Well, I don't know. Alex, if we started the season as bad as we are right now, you know, we from August to December, we finished, you know, bottom of the league. And then all of a sudden, January, we started turning it around. Basically, if our season was swapped and we are where we are now, would you be happy with that? Because I think we would be. I think we'd be fine.
I think so, too. Yeah.
It's kind of like last season. You know, we've just done a reverse, and it hurts because of the way that we were and the way that we were top of the league in November. It's just psychology. We're just in a worse place right now because it's getting worse as opposed to not getting. But we can't see anything getting better at the moment.
Right. It's sort of that definition of insanity. It's doing the same thing over and over again and expecting different results. And we keep losing in the same way. Or one of two different ways, where either we come out in the second half and just show nothing, or our defensive mistakes and defensive just overall shit allow us to just be torn open. And I don't know. I think you were right. If the season was flipped and we were being successful now and having had a poor start to the season, we would be looking at this differently. But I keep thinking back to when we first came out of lockdown and we went undefeated for 7 games, I think it was, and Ralph really polished a turd on that one. And I keep thinking, why has it stopped now with new players and like Walcott and Minamino? What has changed between then and now where we can't get the same sort of effort and same sort of quality out of what we have?
Yeah, it's a difficult one to put your finger on, it isn't it? Having said that, if it had been on the reverse, I think Ralph would have been sacked before January if we'd have been bottom of the league in December. So, you know, it might not have been a reverse. But yeah, the season just seems to be getting worse, doesn't it? We just need those points for safety, move on to next season, because as Tim has said, he's not enjoying the games. I'm not enjoying the games now. But the weird thing is, when the team lineups are released, I get myself up for the game again, and then there's a loss and the cycle repeats. But I'm just tired. I've had enough this season, especially after this week. I am looking forward to the Euros now and, you know, the short turnaround until we go again. But enough is enough now. I just want to enjoy my football again. I want to enjoy watching Saints again. And I don't think that's going to happen this time, this season. We just need to keep treading water, get those points and move on to the off season. And hopefully Gal puts some money in and we can do a lot better in the transfer window.
Or he just fucks off altogether.
That would be nice too.
Dean Hammond here. Thank you for tuning in to In That Number.
Okay then, Leicester at St Mary's, Friday the 30th, 8 p.m. kickoff, live on Sky Sports or NBC. We all remember what happened last time we played them at St Mary's. Tim, give us a preview.
Deja vu all over again. You guys ready for it?
Yep.
Leicester versus Southampton, Friday night. Oh man, aren't you just all excited? between the 9-0 comments, the FA Cup loss, and now our B team getting completely thrashed by them 7-1, it's just a really exciting game to be able to play again. I'm really excited and looking forward to it.
Sorry, Ray, what's the weather forecast for Friday?
It's probably going to be heavy rain.
Oh no.
Last meeting, obviously, we lost 1-0, and their top scorer has been an absolute renaissance for Iheanacho, combined with Vardy. It's a fantastic 1-2 punch for them that they have. When I was predicting and looking like their formation, they came out with a 4-3-3 most recently when we played against them. I think they're still going to be able to do that now, except they'll throw Madison in there. Just because when we played against them for the FA Cup game, that is, they used more of like I said, a 3-4-1-2, 4-3-3. They kind of just bounced around with Castagne and Pereira being involved in. They put their three fantastic center backs up, Wesley Fofana, Johnny Evans, and Soyuncu. And overall, they've got two men up top now where they used to be just a one-man game with Vardy. So, Ayosu Perez started for him. I don't expect him to start this time. I expect him. They're going to throw Madison back in there.
I hate that guy.
But we're going to see Ndidi. We're going to see Tielemans, and we're just going to see, we're going to see the traditional the matchups that we just had. So seeing that, the battle, like what are the key battles? Well, the battle has always been Vardy against the run throughs of Vestergaard and Bednarik.
That should be fucking easy at the moment, shouldn't it?
That's yeah. Well, they knew how to split them open like a can, you know, like a can recently, and seeing all that, that's going to be the matchup again. So how are we going to set up? I think we're going to set up in our normal traditional formation. If Bertrand is still injured out there, I think they're going to throw Salisu out at left back and not have any overlaps. And then I don't think that Amino will start, because I think that their goal now is to figure out what's best for next year. And I could see Tella getting a start again as well. So
I wouldn't be surprised if Tella went up front with Shea, to be honest. Stuck Theo and Armstrong and Redmond and Theo on the bench.
Yeah, I think they're wanting to plan for next year too. So after this game, if we are starting to get any sort of semblance of points, be prepared for the youth to play. And I think actually that'd be the most exciting thing, because I would like to see Jankiewicz get out there than 2 minutes. Yeah, I would really like to see him. I caught some of his highlights that he had against in the. Was it the U19 Worlds that he played in?
Yeah, yeah.
Or the U21s for Switzerland when he played against England?
Yeah.
And he did really well. So that's how I see us setting up. Ward Prowse and Diallo will be in the center. And, yeah, Armstrong, you're looking at Armstrong.
Redmond.
Armstrong Walcott. And Redmond on the outside. Tella and Adams up top.
I think so,
with our traditional back four. And if Salisu's in for Bertrand, if he's injured, and it's really just a 50-50 chance between Foster and
I was going to say, who starts between the sticks? Who are you going with?
It's probably going to be McCarthy. He's just going to stick it out for like a 3 or 4 games, and then they'll keep rotating back and forth.
I'm going to go Foster.
Foster will end. He will end the season.
I'm going to go Foster on Friday. Kev, what are you going with?
I'm going to go with Foster and. Pretty much the same lineup. I'd probably go with Teller in the same position and Redmond up top.
Okay, yeah, that I could see
that. Switching them about, kind of.
Yeah, Alex, who's starting in goal?
I think it's going to be Forster. I would be surprised if Ralph just alternates them the rest of the games every game. I did read an interesting comment this morning from Saints News Now about Bertrand being left out because he hasn't signed a new contract. I don't know.
Then leave Danny out as well, then.
Yeah.
Leave Vestergaard out.
Right. Might as well.
Bertrand's done it this year, though.
Yeah. So,
whereas the rest of them have 1 year left. All those have won.
It's stupid for Ralph to do that, because we don't have another left back. And
I hope to God that they haven't had an argument, because Ralph's just being stubborn, saying, well, if you're not going to, you know, give your future to this club, then you can fucking sit on the bench, mate. I hope that's not the case. I really do, but...
And sit on the bench. In a park somewhere, at the stadium.
Yeah, not at the stadium, yeah. Oh, by the way, I've just looked at the weather. If you're interested, Friday the 30th at 8 o'clock, it's cloudy, 11 degrees, and a 17% chance of rain. So I like those odds.
Watch that go up throughout the week.
That's going to be a downpour by then anyway. Predictions then. I'm going to go 2-1 Leicester, but we're not going to take the lead this time.
I'm going with 2-1 Leicester again. I'm going to recycle my score prediction from last time.
Okay. But are we taking the lead, Kev, and then throwing it away again?
It doesn't fucking matter, does it? The result's the same.
Tim, prediction?
2-0. We're losing.
Alex?
I think I'm going to do the same thing, 2-0.
Gemma is going 2-0 Leicester. Okay. And Abby is going...
3-0.
Saints?
No.
Oh.
Marina's a lot more pessimistic than she usually is. 3-1, she's saying.
Okay. Wow. Right. Right. Okay. That's it. We're going to say goodbye to Tim. Thank you, Tim, for coming on and giving us the preview and your thoughts on the Super League and how shit Saints are at the moment. It's been great having you on.
Thanks so much. Thank you so much. It's a pleasure talking about something so shitty, but I'm just love talking with you guys. So.
Excellent.
Enjoy the rest of your day.
Tim, let's get up for Leicester on Friday. Come on, you Saints.
Come on, you Saints.
Cheers, mate. Speak to you soon.
All right. Bye, guys.
See you, Tim.
Hi, I'm Matt Letitia, and thank you for listening to In That Number.
Okay, welcome back to Extra Time. We'll start with the predictions. Virtually everyone going for a Leicester win apart from me. However, no one went 1-0, so 2 points for everyone, apart from me. And that left the scores: Kevin on 45, me on 40, Tim on 31. Alex, for next season, we'll add you to this, don't worry.
I'll do better.
And Spurs, then. I got a Spurs 2-1 win, so yeah. You guys went for draws, so nothing for you, and five to me. So the scores now: me on 45, Kevin on 45, Tim on 31. So it's all even, Kev.
Neck and neck.
Yeah. And wife wars. As I say, everyone getting Leicester. So 2 points all round. So Spurs, Marina went for a Saints win. So zero for her. Abby got it bang on with a 2-1. So now the scores are Gemma on 30, Abby on 30, and Marina on 25. Still close. Just one win away. Super Six. Round 51 was won by Freddie, near the inside, 19 points. Round 52, Stephen McCullough and Jason Lewis tied with 16, leaving the overall lead, Tom Hennigan, 423. Fantasy football, how did we all do then? I mean, I just realised something, right, that my team has replicated Saints, because I started very well and now it's all falling apart. And I looked at my team and thought, fucking hell, yeah, I've done really well this week. And then I looked at your team, Kev, and thought, shit, you beat me again. Alex, how did you get on?
I did pretty well last week. I'm trying to figure out what my actual point total was, and I'm struggling with that. But this week I am doing hot garbage, if that were a way to describe your point accumulation. I have been up and down all season and just making dumb fantasy decisions. So, oh well.
I don't know how you did last week. I can't remember. Kev, how did you do last week?
I got 75, which is a fairly decent haul for me. Kane captain, I was, was I disappointed that he wasn't playing against Saints? If we'd lost anyway, I mean, it would have been a nice little frosting there. But yeah, Son got me some points as well.
I captained Son, by the way, so that was good. Alex, you got 54 last week.
Yeah, I found it. And for me, that's not bad. See, I'm sitting on 18 right now, so.
Yeah. Well, I got four. I got seven now, so yeah, no good.
I got something similar, but I mean, I think a lot of my players haven't played in it. Oh shit, no, that they mostly have.
Yeah, mine too.
Fucking awful. What are they all doing? One all draws that they're not involved in or something. Yeah, basically. Oh, marvellous. Although, yeah, Iheanacho is my captain, so if he gets a hat trick against Crystal Palace, I'd be roaring away.
All ifs.
He is very big ifs as well. Son's your captain, he's not even playing.
I know. Thanks.
Your vice is Bruno Fernandes, who's just letting three goals against Leeds.
Shut up, you penis.
he's playing at the moment. Okay.
By the way, does anyone know the Wolves and Burnley full-time score? Because I'm not going to look.
Yeah, 4-0 Burnley.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, they hopscotch in position now.
Yeah, who's it just said that Chris Wood got a hat-trick?
Yeah, that was me.
First half hat-trick.
Yeah. Christ. Wolves. Come out of nowhere.
Nuno's going at the end of the season, by the way.
You think?
Yeah.
Yeah.
He'll go. Fantasy football, back to that, Kev. Who's won this week? Last week, rather.
It's difficult to say, isn't it? I mean, I got the best out of us lot. I did better than Matt Markstone, who played his wild card and ended up getting 70 for that. Exactly the same as Ollie's test. Pistols. Freddie from the other ugly inside got 60. And Tim got 58 by playing his wild card. But yeah, I didn't have a wild card, so I planned this in advance. I wouldn't have any Spurs or City players. So should have worked that well for me. So yeah, no real changes in our podcasters league. Although Jack Serlis has pipped you to fifth place.
Fuck.
Yeah, Mikey from the Saints Prime Pod has overtaken me, but I mean that could all change, couldn't it? You're 33rd in our open league, and I'm 44th.
Still ahead.
Yep, top three.
That's all that matters. Just want to beat you, Kev.
Now, top three are Dan Buck, Absolutely Fabregas, Bobby Brown, and Lucy Hynette still top. Let me just see how she's doing. She's got even higher. Fuck you know. So she.
How can she get higher than first?
Well, she was in the top, just in the top 2,000.
Oh yeah,
last time, wasn't she? She used her triple captain to good effect and got 77 points. She's now 1,549. She's not far from winning the whole fucking thing, to be honest.
No, that's good, isn't it?
It's amazing.
Yeah. Russian phrase this week.
Our Russian phrase for this week is Dengi Pravit Miram.
Dengi Pravit Miram.
Dengi Pravit Miram.
Wonderful.
Let me Americanize it. Dengi Pravit Miram.
Excellent. What does that mean, Kevin?
Well, it's appropriate. To that. It's money. Money makes the world go round. Literally, money rules the world.
Perfect. Love it. Okay, that is about it for this week. My thanks to Alex Haas, Tim Bizantz, and you, Kevin.
Thank you very much.
Right, okay, next week we will be reviewing the Leicester collapse, and we will be previewing the Liverpool collapse. until then, up the Saints.
Up the Saints.
Up the Saints.
Up the Saints.
Up Southampton.
Right. If we say down the Saints, do you think they'll do well?